One of the questions that were asked recently regarding duchening is why are we specifically formulating the bracha to be mevarach es amo Yisrael ba'ahava, right? What's the unique aspect of love? If you look in the Torah, it doesn't say anything about love per se. True, Aaron Cohen, Avshalom Rav Shalom, he loved all of Klal Yisrael and tried to bring them together. They loved him. That's why it says in Rashi, when Moshe died, it says that Klal Yisrael cried for him. When Aaron died, it says, Kol Beis Yisrael, everybody, the men, the women, everyone was involved in him. There was a relationship on a very personal level. People could appreciate the impact very directly of Aaron Kohen. But where do we find this notion of Ahava specifically? So the Magen Avraham brings from the Zohar that any Kohen who doesn't love the Tzibur that he's duchening before, he shouldn't do Nesias Kapayim B'chol. Mishabura Kos Shemachronim, I think based on the Zohar, that's a Sakana for the Kohen if he duchens in a situation like that, which is kind of scary, hard to understand exactly what that means. But halacha l'maisa, if there is a kohen who has some sort of unresolved hatred between himself and the tzibur, or vice versa, then in fact he is not supposed to participate in the duchening. So where is this notion of ahava from? So the Be'er Shevan Sota quotes from a Tanchuma. We said that in the instructions given to Moshe Rabbeinu to deliver to Aaron Kohen and sons in Parshas Naso, it says Amor Lahem. There's an extra phrase. Tell Aaron and his children, Kol Zavarcho Es B'nei Yisrael, Amor Lahem. Say to them. So we said it's extraneous, and we spoke about different halachas that are dashin. Interestingly, in that pasuk, Amor Lahem, Aleph Mem Vav Resh. It's written Mole, which is a little unusual. We'd imagine it to be written just Aleph Mem Resh. So the Medrash says that's to suggest there's a fullness, right? When there's a Vav in the word, we call it, it's spelled Mole, as opposed to Chaser. Like a cholam malay, cholam chaser, right? 205. So the fullness suggests a full heart. A person's kavana and a person's feelings have to be put into that bracha, specifically bracha kavana. We don't find about any other notion in the Torah where that is delineated. Amor lahem, with a full heart, that suggests love. That's one possible source. Rabbi Rucham Fishel Perlau says that could be included in the din of panim al panim we discussed. Person who's receiving the bracha and the kohen looking to the tzibur have to be face to face. That's why you're not supposed to turn around, not supposed to look away. You're supposed to be looking at the kohanim. So maybe a function of that. Amor lahem k'derusha adam omer l'chaveru in a conversation between friends. So it's not just physically looking at each other, but also on an emotional level connecting to. Maybe that's the basis for the ava. The Pelioitz makes a very interesting ha'ara. Anyone know how you say love in Spanish?
Amor.
Exactly. Okay. Zakta Valyoitz, Amor Lahem. And French also. Very similar word to the Spanish word for love. So is that just a joke? So the Gemara tells us regarding other words in the Torah, such as totafos. Totafos, describing your tefillin, is not actually a Hebrew word. It comes from an African language. Okay, so very interesting to suggest that that comes in over here. But that is what the Pelioitz mentions. The Panim Yafos says that the Lashon Amira always denotes love as opposed to Lashon Dibor. Dibor suggests harsh. And in that pasuk says that Daber El Aaron Vel Bonav, speak to them with the Daber, but Amor Lahem, their Amira, which addresses their Amira to the Tzibor, has to be the Lashon of Amira, which is a softer, more congenial note, and that might be the basis for Ava. Interesting also to mention the Rebbe Ben Yochar's pshat in the pasuk is that Amor Lahem is not the Ava and the Bracha, sorry, his pshat in the Bracha is not the Kohen to the people, but it's rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love to the people, that the Bracha, the Samar Shmi Al B'nai Yisrael V'Ani Avarchem, the Bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they are the conduit of, is with the love of Hashem. Finally, an interesting remez, Shlomo Kluger points out in Tshuva's Bechartu B'chaim that the word Be'ahava can be broken into three parts. Beis Aleph, which is three, Hey is five, and then Beis Hey is seven. 3, 5, 7. 3, 5, 7 are respectively the number of words in each of the three lines of the bracha. Bracha Hashem Yishmracha, 3, 5, 7. Okay? Just to conclude this nekuda, the Aruch HaShulchan says, L'maisa, when the Kohen gets up to make the bracha, he should be makabel on himself to love the tzibur and vice versa. But that's something that actually should be done in a practical sense before the bracha begins. Okay, number three. what happens if a person is davening Shmoneh Esrei and he's going a little bit longer, the tzibur is up to Birkas Kohanim and he's still in Shmoneh Esrei? What's he supposed to do? So we know in a situation where a person is davening Shmoneh Esrei and the tzibur gets up to Kedusha, so the accepted practice is what? You stop and listen to the primary lines, the kodesh. What's that?
Cohen can't be in the room.
But right now we're talking about Kedusha. Okay? So if you're listening to Kedusha, if you're saying Shmoneh Esrei and they get up to Kedusha, you should be silent and a quasi Shomei Ka'ona, listen to the words of Kedusha, and then afterwards continue with the Shmoneh Esrei. Okay? So in a more general sense, some poskim, from Moshe Feinstein, for example, extends this elsewhere. Let's say you're in Shmoneh Esrei and they get up to Kriyas HaTorah. What am I supposed to do? Or shofar. So he says in the context of both, let's focus on Kriyas HaTorah for a moment. If he says, if you're up to Shmoneh Esrei and Tzibur's up to Kriyas HaTorah, he says, same thing should apply. Be silent, pause your Shmoneh Esrei, listen to the laning, and then you'll continue. Oh, so I'm not saying anything. So Moshe Feinstein says, if I'm not saying anything, the same way that it works for Kedusha, it should work for Kriyas HaTorah as well. Soloveitchik says what you said. Soloveitchik said to be silent and listen to Kedusha is fine because Kedusha really is programmed into the tefillah. Right, it's part and parcel of the tefillah. It's integrated into the tefillah. So to pause and listen and, so to speak, be yotze, perhaps, with Shomei Ka'ona, during my Shmoneh Esrei is not incongruent to the big picture of what I'm doing. But Kriyas HaTorah, which is mamash an unrelated mitzvah, has nothing to do with Shmoneh Esrei, that would be inappropriate to interrupt my tefillah. So when you get to Duchning, so there's what to discuss. Either you could say, Birkas Kohanim is a totally separate mitzvah, and I shouldn't interrupt, but on the other hand, there are many practical aspects of the fact that the Birkas Kohanim is integrated into our tefillah. It really is integrated into our tefillah. In theory, the bracha of Sim Shalom, the final bracha of Shmoneh Esrei, is actually a bracha which includes a tefillah for Hashem to accept the Birkas Kohanim. Many sources indicate that. Other rise to this. So it could be even Rav Soloveitchik would agree that if a person is davening Shmoneh Esrei and they get up to Duchening, that he should be silent and listen, just like Rav Moshe Feinstein says. But there are poskim who say that that one may continue the Shmoneh Esrei without any pause for the Birkas Kohanim. Nevertheless, Rav Moshe Feinstein says you should pause. Number five, a Kohen who recited Birkas Kohanim in one shul, and then, I don't know, for whatever reason, he goes. You know, down the block to the other shul, because there's going to be a kiddush there. He wants to participate in the bar mitzvah, and they're duchening there also, so he's allowed to duchen many times. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, every shul he goes to, he can duchen again. It's never considered a bracha v'atala, because there's no limit to how many times he can perform the mitzvah. Number six, at the conclusion of Birkas Kohanim, so as the Kohanim come down from the duchen, from the bima, wherever they are, so very often people say yashkarach. So what do you say when someone says yashkarach to you? One of those two options, right? Either Baruch Tia or Tizkor Mitzvahs. So some poskim raise the possibility that if you say Yashkar to the Kohen, he says back to you, Baruch Tia, what's he doing? He's giving another bracha. And maybe it's Baal Tosef. The consensus poskim is that that's not a problem. It's a good idea to give Yashkar to the Kohen. Most notably, the reason why it's not Baal Tosef is because it's not in the context of the mitzvah with all the required elements of the mitzvah, like being on the duchen with his hands up, and we're outside of the parameters of the unit of Birkas Kohanim that just concluded, so this would not be a problem of Baal Tosef. But just to be aware that the poskim do discuss that. Some say that Yisrael may not raise his fingers in the formation of the Kohen, Adam, as the Kohanim do when they're doing the Birkas Kohanim. It's based on a statement in the Zohar that the Achronim quote, which may indicate that. It says that one should not be zokef etzbo, should not straighten out his fingers. But some Achronim say it's not clear that the Zohar is talking about what we're talking about. It could be it's only talking about a Kohen. It could be it's only talking about picking it up over his head. So there are various reasons why, strictly speaking, it's hard to find al pi halacha a reason to asr it, but there are those who avoid it nonetheless. Certainly, if you're trying to demonstrate how it's done, to show a Kohen the proper way to give the bracha, so it would be hard to argue against that. Number eight, few exceptions to the Kohanim who are allowed to duchen. A Kohen who killed someone, intentionally or unintentionally, may not perform Birkas Kohanim. So says the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama argues. The Rama says that for Ashkenazim, if a Kohen killed someone, definitely if it was unintentional. B'mezid is a little bit different, but let's say, God forbid, he was in a car accident. and the guy was negligent. Not talking about where it was not his fault, b'chlal, but he was driving too fast, or he wasn't. He went through a red light, and Rachman Aslan, he killed someone. So first of all, we're only talking about a Jew. Consensus of poskim, I believe, is that if it's a non-Jew, it's not subject to this rule. But he killed b'shogeg. So Rama says you got to give the chance the guy to do give the guy a chance to do tshuva. If you tell him that's it, you can't duchen like a kohen anymore. Then it's going to be a mania. It's going to prevent him from wanting to do tshuva. What does it help? You know, I can't even go back to my former status. So as a result, the Rama is mekel. It says that he can do tshuva and resume birchas kohanim. Moshe says in tshuva, if someone was drafted to the army, and Ravidi Yosef says certainly the Israeli army, and he's fighting a Mohammed's mitzvah, so that's never a problem because everything he's doing is a mitzvah. It's his responsibility. I guess we're talking about a case of like a friendly fire where God forbid he kills another Jew. Unfortunately, that happens sometimes in the Sahel as well. But that would not disqualify from duchening, either because it's a non-Jew or because it was part of a mitzvah. Derech Agav, Poskim mentioned the fact that the Chashmonaim, right? They were all Kohanim. They went and fought wars. And then what did they do right after they fought the wars? They came back and did the Avodah and the Mesa Mikdash. Number 9, a Kohen, as we know, is not allowed to marry a divorcee or a convert. And if he does, his children take on the status of a Cholol, and those are no longer Kohanim. That line, he remains a Kohen technically, but his children are not Kohanim. Nevertheless, even though he is, strictly speaking, a Kohen, there's certain privileges that he loses. For example, he does not get to Dochen, doesn't get called up for the first Aliyah. Same is true if he decides, that's it, you know, I'm going to cemeteries, I'm going to become Tommy Mace, which he's not allowed to do. The special privileges that a Kohen is entitled to are lost if he's not maintaining the special standard and special rules and obligations that a Kohen has to observe. Finally, by way of concluding our learning of Brachos Kohanim, the last line, the Ramah, in this section of Shulchan Aruch, pertains to the previous halacha, b'kidashto. B'kidashto is the pasuk in the Torah that says you have to elevate, you have to sanctify the Kohen, whether he likes it or not. You got to force him to divorce his wife if she was a divorcee herself. You have to uphold his standard. Part of upholding his standard is also to sanctify him. Don't ask him to do favors for you. Don't ask him to hold the door for you. Don't ask him to schlep your suitcases for you. If he's a Kohen, it's not appropriate to have him servicing you. If he's mochel, some poskim say he can be mekel. Other poskim say he's not allowed to be mochel. Okay, but certainly, even if he's mochel, you should not ask him to do a demeaning job. You shouldn't say, you know, to the Kohen, take out the garbage for me. This is even b'zman hazeh, even when the Kohanim are not doing the avoda, but it's like sacred property in the Beis HaMikdash, right? You can't use the carbon for your own personal use. You shouldn't use the Kohen for your own personal use as well. Again, certainly if it's something which is degrading, and adarabah, you should look to honor him. If he's at your Shabbos table, if you have a Kohen at your Shabbos table, give him the food first to take from the platter, just like you offer him the schus, the bench, to hold the door for him. Let him go into the Beis HaMikdash first. It's a chash of azach, and it's a kiyum of the mitzvah of ikidashto.